My name is John Scott, and I'm an alcoholic. My goodness, that was a fantastic introduction. I guess it's really really an honor and a privilege to be anywhere speaking about Alcoholics Anonymous. But that was a nice introduction. And I came in here whining, and I'm still whining, I guess. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. This is a nice place to visit because I've got some real friends here. John and Lorraine, several years ago we were here, and, man, we had a weekend. We still talk about that weekend. That was a fun trip. And there were some times in that time that we was with you folks that was just kind of alcoholic. But the nice thing about it, it wasn't us, was it? And to be here with Becky and Tim, it's just a pleasure being here. And they're just such good kids, and I'm so tickled that Tim is in our lives. And it's just one of those unexpected gifts that you get once you get to a place where you're absolutely desperate enough to try anything. All sorts of remarkable things happen, and to see Sid and Catherine here, really it's good to see Sid after all the stuff that I hear about his deal. I mean, you must have a heck of a contact with the power grid in yourself, I'll tell you what. And to see Robin's from our home group in Billings, which is a recovery group, and it's just a lot of old friends, and somewhere back behind that curtain, I guess, is James. It's good to see all you guys. It's almost like an old home weekend way. I'm just kind of, for the most part, reporting about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'll try to catch up a little bit with what's going on now if I ever get to that point. It's like my sponsor told me the first time I gave a talk. He says, most people talk about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. In your case, you'll just talk about what it was like, and what it's like. So I'll try not to do that tonight. Alcoholics Anonymous has really been good to me and my family. It's the most fantastic, it's the most single important event in my life. And I'm just absolutely pleased to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's an old boy in that group, and his name was Old Tom. He says, I'm Old Tom, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I can remember thinking, my God, you've been here too long. You know, how can you be grateful that you're an alcoholic? Because whenever I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, my life wasn't worth much. I had managed to pretty well destroy everything that was near and dear to me. It wasn't so much the stupid things that I did when I was drinking. It was that feeling that I had inside of me, that feeling of absolute worthlessness, that feeling of knowing that my life has turned into a peeled zero. It was that understanding that I guess I didn't understand. It's like I was missing the boat, and I had turned out to be everything I hated and despised. I was not in any way pleased with the way things had gone about in my life the last several years, and especially in the last few months. I can remember several months before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous praying, which I didn't usually do because I didn't really believe in God that much. I heard a example of what an agnostic is, and that is that I believe that there was God, but I believe he wouldn't work for me. And I lived like there wasn't a God. And I saw other people go to church, and they seemed to get it. You know, they seemed to get some kind of a gift or an understanding or some kind of a peace. And I didn't get that. When I tried, I'd go to these Bible studies, and sometimes you'd have to go to other towns, you know. You can't get it in your hometown. So I'd go someplace else and really get it, you know. But then I'd get in some bar, and along about 8 or 9 o'clock, it kind of really dawned on me about what was really going on. And it's like I would begin to know God at a deeper level. And by about 10:30, 11 o'clock, I'd black out and pass out, and the next morning I'd forget the whole deal and have to do it all over again, you know. And I tried that a little bit, and I quit that because obviously God wasn't working in my life. I was working for my folks. We still to this day, I mean, it's been a series of failures and success and failures and success. We've been in agriculture for all my life, and at one time we were very successful. We were doing really well. It wasn't my fault. And I mean, my deal was I'd get up in the morning and I'd step into my helicopter and I'd fly to work. And I had 75 employees. We had the largest feedlot in the state of Montana, and we ran just lots of cattle and did lots of farming. And every one of those employees that I had was an alcoholic just like me, because you know, you don't want to hire them Al-Anons because it make you look bad, you know. So, you know, you might get something done too. So I hired mostly drunks because I liked to, you know, you can't trust a guy who doesn't drink with you. You know, that's what, you know, you have all those sayings and stuff, and that was pretty well gone. We were in a lot of trouble, and it wasn't all my fault, but it dang sure a lot of my fault. And you know, things are just not going good. I'd lost a lot of weight. I like to say sometimes that I was anorexic when I got here. I only weighed about 150 pounds or so, and look at what AA's done for me. You know, it's like somehow I got over that. And they call this a sobriety pouch up in my part of the country, and there's a lot of us getting pouchier as we get older. I finally was, you know, I'd ran across a guy that came to my house about 6 months before I quit drinking. And it was early in the morning. Well, I'll say early in the morning. It was about noon, and his name was Frank, and he came to my house, and I'd already been drinking a little bit, and he wouldn't drink with me, and I couldn't figure it out because Frank and I drank a lot. Frank and I'd get drunk a lot together. He was one of my better drinking buddies. And one night we were drinking, and we got in this argument, and he had called me opinionated, but I proved him wrong. And along about 4 o'clock in the morning, he finally quit, and I'd proved the case that I wasn't opinionating. And it seems like I always would get in those kind of arguments, the kind of argument that, you know, finally you'd walk away with your eyes glazed over, and I thought that I won the argument. What you was really doing is saying, that's enough, I can't do this anymore. And that was the kind of argument that we'd had that day. And I remember later on I had to find my car. I had a tendency to lose my car or my pickup. They disappear. People would steal them in the middle of the night, and I couldn't find them. And I can remember that day I was looking for that rig of mine, but I, you know, I slipped away from what I was talking about. My mind's crazy after that introduction, I guess. I can remember that Frank came over to my house that morning, and I asked him to have a drink, and he wouldn't drink with me. It's like it's really not, there's something wrong. You know, if Frank's not drinking me, there's really something wrong. And I kept after him, and I kept after him, and I'm a belligerent type of a drunk. You know, if you won't have fun with me while we're drinking, I'll have fun with you while I'm drinking. And Frank stayed there for quite a while. My wife Cindy was at work at that time. Funny thing that happened with Cindy, we were kind of in the middle of getting a divorce, and one of the things that had happened is we got in this big time argument one night about her not pulling her weight around there, and she decided she was going to go get a job. Well, I had to laugh because I was drinking with the boys at the keg bar. And the boys at the keg bar wasn't one of the nicest places in Billings. It was kind of a place where all the losers go, and I fit right in. And I can remember going to that bar day after day after day, and there was, heck, I bet there was 10 or 15 people that had been looking for a job for, you know, a year, maybe 2 years, and just hadn't found one. And so Cindy says this one day, we got in this big fight, she talks about she's going to go to town and get a job. And I laughed. I thought, yeah, you just go right ahead. You know, she always thought she could do things that she can't do, you know. And she, you know, and the next thing I know, she'd come back with 3 jobs in one day. And I couldn't believe it. And she worked all 3 of them. That was another thing I couldn't believe. And those guys at the keg bar, they were just absolutely tipped over. They just, you know, they had to be low menial, low paying jobs, but at least she had a job, which is better than some of those guys. Anyway, Frank and I had this time alone, and Cindy was gone working, and Frank kept trying to leave, and he couldn't get away from me. I had a bar downstairs, and I'd be down there drinking, and he'd every once in a while he'd say, "Well, John, I got to go to a meeting, I got to get out of here." And I'd say, "Come on, Frank, what are you talking about? You got to stick around and listen to me for a while. You know, I mean, this is no good. I mean, you leave, I won't have nobody to drink with." And it's kind of by this time I was completely oblivious to the fact that Frank wasn't drinking, and I said, where do you got to go? That's so doggone important. He says, finally he breaks down. He says, Don, I got to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, geez, Frank is tipped over. You know, it's like, this is bad. This is a bad deal. I said, Frank, you drink just like I do. And he says, yeah, I know. You know, I said, my goodness. I said, well, you know, I've been thinking about it. My life is upside down. I can't stand my wife. I can't stand myself. And, you know, maybe I need to do something. And I asked him that night. I said, Frank, would you take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he said, no. He says, I will not take you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who are willing to stop drinking. And obviously you're not willing yet. You're still drinking. You know, the next morning I woke up in a cold sweat thinking, you know, my God, I almost overcorrected. I can't believe it. I almost went to a meeting of A&E last night, and it's like, I was so relieved, you know, because I wasn't that bad. I really wasn't that bad. But 6 months later, I was that bad. I can remember waking up in the basement 6 months later, and I can remember it just like yesterday. And it's like, you know, how we wake up, just total fright, just all of a sudden, it's like you're gasping for air, and it's like you're trying to figure out what it is that you did last night. That was always difficult living, you know, because you Al-Anons don't catch this, but us drunks, we would have to wake up and come to you and ask you questions in such a way that you didn't know that we didn't know about what the heck we did last night. Now, if you've got an Al-Anon like mine, she always liked to just turn it into you a little bit, you know. And I know that she put a little extra color into some of those stories, you know, because I know there's no way in the world I could do some of that stuff. But she'd sit there and, well, if you don't believe me, go ask somebody else. And I wouldn't want to do that because, you know, you just don't want to talk about that kind of stuff. And that makes life uncomfortable. That's hard living. And lying, like we lied. I mean, I lied all the time. I lied when the truth would serve me better. So it's just like I'd just lie for practice sometimes, you know. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to tell you, I still lie every once in a while if I don't watch it. You know, we used to do it in our home group. We used to say, well, that's a lie. And everybody, yo, that's right. That sounds like a lie. You know, it's like, and we kind of got to where we quit doing it. You know, it kind of helped a little bit. But I can remember just out of sheer desperation waking up that morning, my paycheck was gone. I was in a house. I didn't know where the heck I was at. You know, I didn't know what had happened. I'd been on a 2-week runner, so she wasn't around, so I couldn't ask what I'd done, you know. And I was at this guy's house. His name was John. And I told John that morning, we went to look for my pickup, and somebody stole it again. And I can remember going down the street and asking, you know, telling John, you know, John, I don't think I can do this anymore. I really don't think I can do this anymore. And Frank seems to have an answer. I don't think Frank's drank now for about 6 or 7 months. And that's a fantastic deal because Frank drinks a lot. I thought he drank worse than me. Later on, I found out that might not be true. But, you know, I knew that he drank a lot. And so we decided to go see Frank. Frank worked at a feed store, and we picked up a case of beer before we got there because I get nervous in the mornings when I've been drinking like that, and I had to have a little relaxer, and I can remember having 4 or 5 of those beers, and I walked into Frank's feed store, and I walked in the back, and I said, Frank, me and a guy named Johnny wants to talk to you for a little bit about this AA thing, and oh, he was so tickled. He was so glad to see us, and he said, just a minute, and he ran in the back room and got him these 20 questions. Have you guys seen the 20 questions, you know? They're stupid questions, but you can't pass the test if you're an alcoholic. It's just like it's impossible. You sit there and cheat, and you still lose, or you don't get it, you know. And you know what's funny? Today, whenever Cindy's Al-Anons come over, every once in a while, I'll have them take the. You guys can't even pass the test. You guys will pass the test, and Alki can't do it, you know. And I don't know how that works because I cheated and I still flunked bad. And he says, here, take this test and see what happens. And I failed it. You know, I think it says if you get like 3, if you get 2 wrong, you might be an, but 3, you're gone. You're a bad alcoholic. Well, I had like, you know, 12, you know. Anyway, he says, you know, he says, I tell you what, you guys are already drinking today. He said, but take these 20 questions and see what you think. See if it fits you. And I said, well, we really want to go to a meeting. He said, well, I'm not going to take you to a meeting today. Well, why not, Frank? He said, because Alcoholics Anonymous for people who quit drinking. And you guys are still drinking. Look, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. You're still drinking. He says, but go ahead and drink all you want to today. But tonight, when you quit drinking, don't drink no more, and I'll see you at a meeting tomorrow night. And so anyway, I said, all right. So that sounded good to me because I didn't mind drinking the rest of the day, you know, especially if you had a hangover like I had. And so I remember me and this Johnny went to the keg bar at about 8:15 or 8:20 that morning. There's about eight or nine. Well, it wasn't that many. There's about five of us there. And we got the 20 questions out. And do you know that not one single person in the keg bar at 8:30 in the morning could pass the 20-question test? Now, I want you to know I have a secret weapon. It's this gray matter between my ears. And it tells me things that aren't true, but I love to believe it. And what it told me is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a trap. There's somebody that's figured this thing out, or if poor, unsuspecting alcoholics are going to come along, down on their luck a little bit, take this 20 questions test, and you're going to flunk it, have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's going to be counselors there, and they're going to, after they get you roped in pretty good, they're going to end up wanting 25, 50 bucks a month from you. And that's the deal, you know. And, I mean, I just knew that. I didn't talk to anybody about it. It just came like a wave and over the top. And I just knew. And I have a lot of that knowing, you know. I just have a lot of that kind of stuff that happens to me. I don't have no reason at all to believe it, but it's just reality, okay? And I know for sure that that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's just a trap. It's another con deal. And I didn't trust anybody. I didn't trust a soul. And so here you got an organization that I don't have to trust. And I can remember that I drank the rest of that day. I called Cindy up, and I'd promised Cindy. This was long about Christmas time, and I had promised Cindy that I was not going to drink because she is working at the bank, and it was important that I show up at that party. And I told her I wouldn't drink, and I had to call her and say, you know, I've been drinking. And she was not happy. She was not ever happy with me. She didn't like my friends. She didn't like what I did. Nothing made her happy. And so I told her that I wasn't going to make it to that party. And it was quiet. I said, but I want to tell you something, Cindy. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous tomorrow. And I can remember saying, well, ain't that special, and hung up on me, you know. She wasn't very happy, but, you know, and I'd go back and have a few more drinks and say, well, if you had a wife like mine, you'd drink too, type of a deal, you know. And I got to remember the last day I drank and how wonderful it was, you know. Sometimes we get that euphoric recall, you know, it's like, oh, drinking was so much fun. I always like to remember that last day of drinking, just how much fun it was. What I'd do is I'd be sitting over in the corner crying because I was so lonely and nobody would talk to me. And I was by myself. And other people would sit at the bar, maybe one or two of those people. They'd be sitting there talking to the bartender. And they'd be laughing, and I wasn't in on the deal. And I'd cry. And, oh, I'd cry. And it was just so sad. You know, I kind of like being sad sometimes because it just, you know, you just kind of, just self-pity, just wave after wave. You know, it's just almost comfortable if you live there long enough. And I found myself just feeling so wonderfully sad, you know, and people would come up to me, and then I'd want to fight them. You know, and then they'd leave because obviously, and then I'd be crying because they didn't like me. And then in between that, I'd go in the bathroom and throw up every once in a while. You know, so it was a wonderful day. I mean, I just had a blast. And the next morning, I remember the phone rang, and Frank, and he called Cindy up on the phone and said, now don't let him drink. And Cindy had long since quit worrying about me drinking. And she said something to Frank. She was never happy with my friends. She just wouldn't, you know, she wouldn't have nothing much to do with them. If they'd come to the door, knock on the door, she'd just look at them. What do you want? You know, type of a deal. And they'd say, is John here? Yeah, downstairs. And she'd walk off and leave the door open, you know, and not friendly. She was not user friendly. And I couldn't help it that I'd gotten somebody that, she wasn't like that when I first met her. She was just absolutely fantastic. But along the years, she had soured on me. I remember going to that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Frank finally got a hold of me. She finally let me have the phone. And he says, I want you to come a little early. He says, we're going to go across the street. We're going to eat at this restaurant before we go to the meeting. And he says, I want you to meet a guy. He's my sponsor. His name is Richard. And I said, all right. So anyway, I drove into town. I was rocking and rolling. I was sweating. I was nervous. I'd about a 2-week runner, and I was just not feeling well. And they were laughing and joking, and they had these little dinner steaks that they ordered. And it says, here, get one. I said, no, I'm not hungry. I didn't eat well at that time. And they said, no, get one. So they ordered one, and they ate it too, you know. Richard asked me a question, and I remember it just like yesterday. He says, John, do you feel like you're responsible for your own actions? Now, I've been kind of trying to get into this AA group for 6 months now. You know, I've been turned down several times. And I knew that the answer had to be correct or else they weren't going to let me in there. And it was like my mind was just flying. And I knew the right answer, I thought. And I said, yes, I feel like I'm responsible for my own actions. And he says, good. He says, maybe now you'll start acting like it. And I knew right then that he had been talking to Cindy. Or, you know. It didn't really matter, but I knew that these guys, he knew more about me. He had to have some information, some inside information, because he was able to describe to me the feelings that I was feeling at that time. And he talked about being sober for 5 years and forgetting that he was an alcoholic and getting drunk and almost not surviving that drunk. And he talked to me about the emotions and the feelings and the despair that I was going through. And yet he looked like he was successful. He was wearing a 3-piece suit. He stood up straight. He sat up straight and he acted like he had his lights on, and they were. And he was an attraction to me from the very first time I seen him. But he scared me because he knew something about me that I didn't know how he knew, but I knew he knew. And I found myself walking across the street with Frank and Richard that first night, and we went to that meeting. There's another gal there. They asked if there's any new people, and I raised my hand, and she raised her hand, and they had this meeting. And these people were laughing, and they were joking, and I thought, these guys are all paid counselors. That's why they're so happy. They found another two victims that walked in here. In a couple of months, they're going to have all of our money. It's good, you know. And they said that you need to get a sponsor. And I figured that that's what that $25-$50 was for a sponsor, you know, to pay for their way. I didn't know nothing about a sponsor. The first night, they appointed me a sponsor. This guy named Johnny says, I'll be your sponsor. So he says, I want you to come home with me tonight. So I remember going home with him. I didn't like it very much, but we went home, and he's talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous and about how you don't have to hurt anymore, that the pain is optional, and that we can quit drinking. We have the ability to quit drinking. And then at 2 o'clock, he says, you can go home now. And 2 o'clock in Billings, Montana, the bars close. And so he sent me home, and the next morning we get together about 8 o'clock, and he's talking to me for a while, and I was just rocking and rolling. I got crazier as I got sober, and a little bit later, about noon, two guys came by from the group, and they took me out to eat, and we ate. And then after that, two more guys came along, and pretty quick it was time for the meeting. We went to the meeting. After the meeting, went to Johnny's house again. 2 o'clock, he says, time to go home now. And I mean, that's kind of what happened for that next week. And they fixed me up some K-roll syrup and some honey and some orange juice, whole handful of vitamins. I don't know what kind they were, just a bunch of vitamins, and he stuck it in the blender and says, here, drink this. It'll make you feel better. And I don't remember it making me feel better, but I remember me saying, oh, I feel so much better now, you know, because I didn't have to drink it anymore because I didn't really like the taste of it at all. I hadn't even had a piece of pie in I don't know how long, and here I'm drinking all this sweet stuff. And they said that I needed some of that stuff. And what happened was little by little, things changed. And for some reason, I began to pick up on the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for me, that message was hope. For me, I was beginning to see that, I didn't think all of you people were alcoholics, but what I began to think was that there were some of you guys. You know, I sponsored his brother later, but there was a guy that's sitting right next to me one meeting, and his name was Tim, and I asked Tim, I said, how long you been here? Because Tim didn't look well. You know, asked him how long he'd been there. He said, 3 weeks. He looked like he had about 3 weeks. He was, you know, just a little fast. But I was totally amazed by Tim because he had 3 weeks. I hadn't been sober 3 weeks for as long as I could remember, you know. And there was guys in that group that had 15, 20, 25, 30 years. And I, now, you know, I mean, why? Why would you stay sober for that long? I mean, come on, you know. I mean, as soon as I get the heat off of me, I'm out of here. You know, I looked at the steps on the wall. Every other word's God there for a while, you know, but I looked at the steps on the wall and thought, you know, maybe 3-4 weeks, maybe a month, maybe a couple of months, I'll be out of here, you know. And there's guys in there that had 25 years and they were still working on the first 164 pages of that big book. I thought, man, secret weapon kicked in. I thought, geez, these poor people. I mean, I really felt sorry for them because they're so slow, you know, and I found myself, you know, somehow, but I was really attracted to this Tim, and he was staying sober, and that was a fantastic deal because I knew he'd bought the lie, but somehow I could believe him, and I started to do that. Because Tim was going to be there, I remember coming to the next meeting, about 45 days into drinking, or into sobriety, my sponsor went out and got drunk. He got mad at the group, he got mad at his sponsor, and he got drunk. You know, and I was kind of glad in a way. I mean, I'm a sick man, and I can remember, you know, because they said you should be able to pick your sponsor, and I didn't get to pick him because I was appointed, you know. And I thought, you know, I've been looking at that little blonde, and I thought, I'm just going to ask her to be my sponsor. I remember going in there that first night, and I was walking across the room, and Richard came out of nowhere, you know. Frank's sponsor. Three-piece suit, wingtip shoes, standing up straight. Says, I understand your sponsor's gone. I said, well, that's what I hear. He says, I'll be your sponsor now. I said, well, Richard, I don't know if I want you to be my sponsor or not. Oh, he says, I didn't ask you whether or not you wanted me to be your sponsor. He says, I'm going to be your sponsor. And, you know, he always knew. He always knew what I wanted. You know, even when I knew he didn't know, he'd just, you know, and the next thing, I'd be doing it, you know. A couple of days later, he sold me a car that I really didn't want, a diesel car. You know, he says, this is what I wanted. I didn't really know that's what I wanted, but he ended up, Cindy didn't like it, but I got it. And at that time, anything that Cindy didn't like that I got, I just kind of liked that, you know, a little bit. We were at war. We didn't like each other even a little bit. We were just kind of together. And Richard asked me, he says, how is your relationship with your wife? He says, oh, I'm getting a divorce. He says, you what? And I said, let me get this straight. You're getting it or she's getting it? I says, I'm getting a divorce. Oh, he says, you'll quit that right now. I said, well, wait a minute. This woman is crazy. Oh, hell yeah. She's got to be plumb out of her stinking mind. He says, you've been married to her for 14 years and she's been with you all that time and you've been drinking? Heck yeah, she's got to be plumb out of her gourd to be married to you. He says, absolutely. Has to be crazy. He says, I'm going to tell you something. Don't tell her this, but I'm going to tell you something. She's probably sicker than you are. He says, now, take this easy. I know this is a bunch of Al-Anon, so be careful. He says, listen. He says, all those years you was drinking, you had a little sedative. You could relax a little bit. She did it stark, raving, sober. He says, she's got to be out of her sick, stinking mind. She's so sick. And he says, but don't tell her. Of course, I got in that diesel car. I went home. Cindy, guess what? Well, she was unimpressed. And he says, you're going to quit this deal with this divorce. He says, we don't do any major deals for a year. He says, I'll tell you what we're going to do. What we're going to do is you're going to sit down and you're going to start treating her kind. And for you, that means that you're going to have to, if you think a kind thing to do with her is like a number one or a number two, for you it's going to have to be like a 12 or a 14. You're going to have to understand that kindness to you means something that you haven't tried for quite a while. You're going to have to try at another level. He says, what you're going to do is you're going to treat her with kindness. He says, you're going to go home. She's there. You're going to practice on her. You don't know how to have a relationship. Maybe a year from now you might get a divorce, but right now we're not going to do that because right now, as sick as you are, we don't want to make any sudden changes. So what you get to do, when you go home, you get to tell her you love her. Well, it's the honesty program. It's making me lie right out the gate. You know, and I can remember thinking, you know, I can't do this. I'm not going to, I don't love her. I don't care about her at all. I don't even like her. You know, and he says, it doesn't matter. That's what you're going to start doing. You're going to start telling her you love her. But you're a liar. And he says, and because you're a liar, when you tell her you love her, she's going to know that you're lying, but you're going to have to start taking actions that show that. And for you, these are going to be really, and I thought, you know, I could just see actions, my actions, and his were totally different. And I can remember him saying, you know, you're going to have to start cleaning it up after yourself. You're going to have to fix a meal every once in a while. You're going to have to carry out the garbage. You're going to have to do things that show her that you love her. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm not really interested in that. I don't even like her a little bit. He says, I don't care. He was always like that. He just didn't care. You know, I told him I didn't believe in God. He says, well, pray to God anyway. He says, God don't care if you don't believe in God. And he says, I don't care. Just pray. You know, and I says, well, I don't love her. He says, I don't care. Just tell her you love her. And it's kind of like a guy said the other night at a meeting. He says, you know, he says, I can't get it through my sponsor's head about what's going on in my life. He says, I tell him that I have all these financial problems. And he's like saying, well, put a fish in your pocket. You know, it's like, it doesn't make any sense what they tell you to do, you know. And my sponsor's telling me to tell her that I love her. I don't know anything about how to love her. And but he says, I'll give you a carrot if you do. He says, I'll tell you what will happen. If you do this right, it'll drive her crazy. I said, oh, well, if it'll drive her crazy, I'll do it, you know. And it did. It just drove. She'd come at me and she'd, you know, I'd come home and, I mean, we'd hardly talk anyway. And I'd come home and I'd say, you know, I love her. And I'd go over and kind of clean up the dishes. And she'd kind of come at me with this inventory that she'd been working on for the last 4 or 5 years. And she started out and you know, and I'd just say, that's right. That's right. And you forgot a few here. She'd lock up. She wouldn't know what to do. She'd have to walk back into the other room and I'd go, yes, you know. you know, that's just kind of how things were. I mean, and little by little, that thing got better. It's just amazing how this thing works. You know, Cindy wasn't even going to meetings, and it was like she was improving. I don't know how that worked. You know, I was very fortunate when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell into a group of old-timers that weren't there for about another 2 years. Most of them all gone away or died or something happened within a two-year period. But I always like to kind of remember that group that I first went to and I got sobered. And there was a guy named Rotten Ralph, and Rotten Ralph was his attorney. And he earned a name. And Rotten Ralph's favorite deal was he'd be sitting in a meeting, and if you're a newcomer or an old-timer who's in a bad spot, he'd just attack you, you know, verbally. And when he'd get through attacking you, he'd say, now, if I've made you so mad that you feel like you need a drink, he'd reach in his pocket and pull out a dollar bill. He said, let me buy you your first drink. You know, I mean, that, you know, that guy was harsh. He was harsh. And then there's this another guy named Nick. And Nick was a guy, Frank and I would be sitting there talking about getting this divorce on the couch. And Nick would walk behind us and say, well, pour me another drink. You know, and that kind of stuff. And Nick's favorite deal was, you know, now if you're coming to my group and you've been here for 5 or 6 weeks, there's really no need for me to remember your name. I don't even try to remember people's names until they've at least been here 6 or 8 months. And I thought, what a puke, you know. And then there's a gal named Millie, and Millie would sit back and she'd say, look at all the miracles. Look at all the miracles. You know, I don't see no miracles. I don't understand what she's talking about. And then there's a gal named Margaret. Margaret would say, it didn't matter when you called her. You'd call Margaret and say, well, my name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that go to meetings stay sober. And them that don't. Thank you. And she'd sit down. You call Margaret 6 months from now, and she'd say, my name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that go to meetings stay sober. And them that don't. Thank you. And I go, what a sick message. You know, I mean, there's nothing there, you know. But I got to tell you, it's not a bad message. You know, it's really got a lot to it. But there's a guy named Gerald. Now, Gerald thought that I had an attitude. I don't know where he got this idea. But he thought that I had an attitude, and he'd ask me how I was doing. I told him I wasn't doing well. I hated everything that was happening to me. I hated my wife. My sponsor didn't know what. He said, nah, stop it. He says, don't do that no more. He says, from now on, John, when I come and I ask you how you're doing, he says, you're going to answer me in this way. You're going to say, why, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much. You know, and I, you know. They don't know. It's like, what do you do with that fish in your pocket thing, you know? I can remember one night I was thinking, you know, that Nick, I don't know if any of you guys have done this, but it's like get the old timer thing. I thought, you know, I'm going to get that Nick. I'm going to get that Nick. And I went over to Nick and, you know, in my most humble way. I don't want you to think I'm a con, but in my humblest way, I went up to Nick and said, Nick, you got a minute? Nick says, sure. You know, Nick would help you. I mean, it's just my ego wouldn't allow much help. I got him to sit down on the couch. And this is after a meeting. There's about 8 or 10 people sitting around the meeting having individual conversations. And I says, Nick, you know, I started telling him a sad story about how my wife has been screwing me over all my life. He just jumps up and out of nowhere. He says, so you're an alcoholic. He says, now what the hell are you going to do about it? And it's like, I'm looking around. People are there, and it's embarrassing. It's like, this is it. I've had it. I can't stand this Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. These guys are all fooling themselves. Life is not a picnic, especially if you're new. And I find myself kind of trying to get out of the room. I was gonna leave. I was quitting forever. And Nick was an old crippled guy, you know. And I'm headed for the door, and to get to the door, you had to go around this refrigerator. And he's there by the refrigerator. I mean, I guess I got a coat or something. I don't know. But anyway, he's there on my way out. He pushes me up against this refrigerator. He's a little guy, about this tall. He says, "You're wasting my time." He says, "You're wasting my time." He says, "You're wasting their time, and you're dang sure wasting your time. Why don't you just go get drunk, because that's all you're trying to do?" And I can remember, just like out of nowhere, it's Rotten Ralph with a dollar. "Yeah, let me buy you a first drink. Let me buy you a first drink." And I can't stand these people. It's like they're driving me crazy, you know. This is supposed to be love and tolerance as our cold bunch, you know. It's like it's not even close. They're driving me away. And I ran outside. I got my diesel car, and I'm going to spin. It was a gravel parking lot. I'm going to spin out, you know. Beating on the dash, I'm honking the horn, I'm driving through town just a crazy man. I have temper tantrums. If I don't watch it, I still have one today. You know, it's just craziness, just insanity. And I find myself driving. You know, the only thing that saved my bacon was that I had to drive about 30, 35 miles out to the ranch where we lived. And I can remember just driving through the country, just all this craziness. It's like all of a sudden, it's like I could hear Nick saying, "So you're an alcoholic. Now, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?" And that's one of the pushy things about Alcoholics Anonymous. It insists that I do something about my problem. I'd rather for you to do something about my problem. I'd rather my problem be outside of me, but it's not outside of me. It's inside of me. And what had to happen is I had to be able to come to the place that the book talks about. I had to begin to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as I had been living it. And I think at that point is whenever I first started to feel true despair. Because I'm sober for a couple of weeks. I'm sober and I'm crazier than a loon. You know, life is not good sober, but I cannot drink. I can't imagine life drinking, and I can't imagine life not drinking. I can't do it right this way or that way. There is nothing that I can do. There's nothing that I can do, and I thought, you know, I think Nick's maybe right. Because a lot of people had a lot of respect for Nick, and I knew they did. And something happened to me on the way home that night, and I began to think, you know, maybe these guys got something. And I can remember a couple of days later, I started to drive back into town. Oh, God, I hate to do this. You know, that public humiliation I just endured, you know, with Nick and Ralph and those guys and all the people that was there when Nick jumped down my throat. And, you know, I didn't want to, and I'm thinking, God, but it doesn't matter. What else am I going to do? This is all I can do. This is what this, and Gerald, Gerald, there's another. I'm going to drive back in and say, "How you doing, John?" "Why, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much." You know, it's like, and it's funny. I was thinking about that, and it's like all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, I think you are. And it was like I think that was the first glimmer of hope that I started to have for myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found myself beginning to be willing to take the actions necessary to bring about a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. And I think that's when it started. I don't know exactly where it started, but I believe that's whenever I started to surrender. That's when I started to give up on having it my way on most everything. Now, don't get me wrong. A few months later, I'm married to Sick Al-Anon, who's no longer sick now, but she was in. And she would come up to me and she'd say the darnest thing. She's like, "Well, you're not that bad. You know, how come you're still going to meetings? It's like you quit drinking now. And it's like you need to come home and take care of the family and take care of me and this kind of stuff." And I remember talking to my sponsor, Richard, about it. And Richard says, no. He says, "You're an alcoholic." He says, "You need to go to these meetings." He says, "You just keep going to these meetings." He says, we'll let her. She's going to have to work out her deal, but you're going to have to go to the meetings because you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And we fought that battle for 4 years, I guess. I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't get struck well. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and at the end of 3.5 years, I was in the middle of bankruptcy. I was close to the middle of a divorce. I was suicidal. I was absolutely nuts 3.5 years sober. Just absolutely nuts. My sponsor had left about a year before then. Now, when you're 2 years sober, if you're a guy like me and you got the secret weapon I have, you really don't need a sponsor. I mean, you can use the group as a sponsor. The only bad thing about using the group as a sponsor is you'll always find someone sick enough to go along with whatever the crazy, insane thinking you got going on at the time. Yeah, you can do, that's all I need. One guy says, yeah, you can do that. There it is. No, talk to 12 old timers. No way. There's no way in the world you should do that. Talk to one new guy. Yeah, you can do that. There it is. You know, that's all I have to do is have some crazy idiot tell me that I can do whatever it is that I think I can do. And I find myself just absolutely just as close to death, I think, at 3.5 years of sobriety as I was 3.5 days before I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And, alcoholism demands to be treated. And I don't think for a guy like me that I can stay here if I half measure this thing. I had been doing that. I had been trying to do this. I was trying to do as little as I could do to get by. I didn't want to get into Alcoholics Anonymous too deeply and become an AA fanatic. You don't want that to happen because, I needed to get out into the mainstream of life like I knew what that was. You know, and I just needed to, I knew these things I needed to do, and I would pick and choose the people who would tell me that that's okay, you can do that. And I got desperate enough after a few more months that I got myself a sponsor, he was one of these guys that didn't care about what you thought either, Richard had left, he'd moved to California, so I ended up with another guy, and his name was Jim Shaw, and Jim Shaw was absolutely a tyrant. And bless his heart, he saved my life. He really did. He did a good job. And we worked the steps, and we went through the process of doing what we need to do to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I think what happens to us is if you don't watch it, you get sober, and you begin to think, well, you know, we're okay because we're sober. We think we've kind of got past the hurdle. And I got to tell you, you know, I was about 11 years sober, I believe, maybe 12 years sober, and my sister had a store that she was having trouble with it and it was going under, somehow I got in charge of managing this store, which was a crazy idea because I don't know nothing about it, and of course that sounds like an alky deal, you know, don't know nothing about it, I'll do that, I can remember I was sponsoring a guy at that time, a very rich, wealthy guy. And he spent his winters down in South America or Central America, and I sponsored him for a few minutes. And he told me one day, he called me up and he says, you know, he says, John, he says, I'm not going to do what you guys do because you're crazy. You're doing too dang much. He says, I don't have that kind of time. I don't have that kind of energy. He says, I'm just not going to do it. And he was really good. I mean, this guy was a salesman of the highest order, and he talked to me for about 25-30 minutes, and I'm going, that was really right on. I'm starting to quit. I'm thinking about quitting Alcoholics Anonymous myself. I mean, anyway, I hung up the phone, and my sister had just called right before he called, and we'd set up an appointment to have lunch, and I'm thinking about this. Now, this is how good I am after about 11-12 years of sobriety. I'm thinking, you know, that guy's right. And I picked my sister up, who had been in a huge state of depression for quite a while because she's losing her store and now her crazy alcoholic brother's running it. And she's just absolutely just distraught. She hadn't laughed or smiled in days, weeks, months, you know. And I find myself sitting there talking to her and I said, you know, Maggie, I got to thinking. I don't think I'm that bad. Truth of the matter is I went through a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings, and Cindy and I was having a lot of troubles, and now today we're kind of all right. And I don't really think I really drink that much. And she's over there, started laughing. Hadn't laughed for a long, long time. She starts laughing. I mean, she gets down laughing, and she starts yelling at me to get her to a gas station right now. And I pulled in there, and she ran into the bathroom and come back out, still laughing. I says, what's so dang funny? She says, my God, you are sick, aren't you? And I said, what are you talking about? She says, don't you remember? Remember what? She says, don't you remember the last 3 years that you drank, you never drew a sober breath the entire time, and you're saying you didn't drink that bad? I'm going, well, shoot, I guess I'll have to go to another meeting tonight. You know, I mean, that's what happens to us. I think we begin, you know, it says that we can't remember the suffering and humiliation of a week or even a month ago. Well, what about 12, 13 years? What happens with us is we have like a form of mental illness almost. It's like our mind. It talks about it in the book. It says our troubles are centered in our mind. Our mind takes us over, and after a short period of time in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's 6 months or 6 years or 16 years, our mind takes us over and we begin to believe the lie. The secret weapon kicks into gear. And I find myself in kind of a form of insanity believing the great lie. And the great lie is that I am like other people. I'm not like other people. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. When I take a drink of alcohol, it makes me thirsty. I just want more and more and more. And you never get enough. We don't know what enough is. We don't, you know, how do you get enough? You don't know. It doesn't happen. Alcoholics don't understand that word. You know, we don't know how that works. I'm allergic to apples, bananas, cherries, and avocados. When I take a bite of an apple, my face swells shut, my chest swells shut, and I can't breathe. Doesn't matter what I do about it, that's the way it is. My doctor says, don't do that anymore. I don't do that. I don't sit there with tears in my eyes looking across, seeing somebody at a restaurant, a fancy restaurant, having fruit salad going, my God, why me? Why me? You know, it just doesn't happen. But you put booze over there now. That's wine even. And I hate wine. I never drank wine. Wine always made me sick. But to this day, somebody will sit over there and have wine. And just a little thought, you know, a little poison dart comes into my head. Yeah, they're having wine. Too bad I can't have no wine, even though I hate it, you know. But it's just the way it works, you know. And you know, I always kind of joke about this, but even if I went to AA, Apples Anonymous, you know, even if I went to AA and really got good and studied about Apples Anonymous and about how you shouldn't eat apples and what the allergic reaction effect is on my body, even if I learned everything and went to meetings for 12, 13, 14 years, even after all that, if I go eat an apple today, tonight, I promise you, it doesn't matter how much I know, it doesn't matter how good I've been, my body's going to have an abnormal reaction, and I'm going to find myself in the hospital with my chest swollen shut, with my eyes swollen shut, and I won't be able to breathe. Now, what makes me think, what is the difference between that kind of thinking and the alcoholic kind of thinking? And the part that's missing is the obsession, the mental obsession. I have never to this day had a miserable damn day, and I, all right, this is it. I'm going to go to the grocery store. I go to the grocery store. I buy 6 apples. And I put 2 in the glove compartment for tomorrow. I put 2 in the trunk in case she finds the 2 in the glove compartment. And I eat one on the way home, and when I get home, I eat another one at her. You know, take that. You know, I mean, that just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And the reason it doesn't happen is I don't have that peculiar mental twist. I could care less, really, to tell you the truth, if I ever eat another apple as long as I live. I don't have to go to AA, Apples Anonymous. But I have to go to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, because there's a difference in both of those illnesses. The apples don't have the mental obsession. The alcoholism does. And the main cure for me in Alcoholics Anonymous is to deal with the mental obsession. And that's what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous does. That's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous does. It deals with the insanity of the thinking that we have right prior to taking our first drink. And drinks that we see others taking with impunity. Used to make me so mad I'd sit there in a bar. And she would drink, you know, it's like, have a drink, Cindy. And Cindy would have a drink. She, you know, always weird, umbrella drink, you know, type of deal. You know, put an eye out if you didn't watch it type of thing. And you'd be sitting there and she'd sit there and laugh and stir and talk and laugh and stir. And my deal was 2 at a time and keep them coming. And I'd sit there and I'd slam them down and she's still laughing and talking and stirring. And I'd, drink it! You know, and finally she might drink it. She might have one. And then I'd say, well, let's have another. And she'd say, oh no, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. And it's like, what? What are you talking about? Drink it. You know, I don't know what it is that you're feeling, but whatever, drink past that, because obviously you're not getting the full, get rid of those umbrella drinks and drink some whiskey or do something different. It's like, what I thought that she was supposed to be receiving is the same thing that I was receiving, but they don't, you Al-Anons look at us and go, why? And we look at you and go, why? You know, because we don't understand. You know, most people in the world don't understand what we alcoholics take for granted. I mean, we kind of look at you guys and go, poor people. You know, because when I take a drink of alcohol, something changes inside of me. And I feel more at peace with myself than I have ever been able to feel at peace with myself when I was sober. I feel like I'm in the right place at the right time. And when I'm not drinking, I'm always in the wrong place and I'm always at the wrong time. It's like there's something that happens. It talks about it in the book. It says a sense of ease and comfort. It comes at once. It comes at once from having a few drinks. Drinks we see Al-Anon's drinking with impunity. Well, the reason we see you drinking it with impunity is because you don't drink like we drink. You know, I think that what you're doing is what I'm doing, but it's not. You're having one or two and you're quitting. You're one or two you didn't even want in the first place. And I'm going, you know, we can have one or two now, and I'm already thinking about the case or the six-pack or the half-gallon that I got to buy in about another 20 minutes. You know, I'm down the road a little bit. So because of people like you in rooms like this, I've been able to stay sober for a few days, and it's such a fantastic life. And if you're new and you're sitting there, the theme is sobriety is a picnic, and if you're like me, the first 3 years of my sobriety, you're going, yeah, some picnic, you know, somebody forgot to tell you about the hailstorm and the rain and the lightning and the tornadoes and the wind, and that's there, you know. But I'm going to tell you something. Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon has so much to offer people like us. It takes people who absolutely don't know how to live comfortably, and all of a sudden, because of the steps and because of the action and because of the sponsorship, we begin to live way better than I ever dreamed that I could live. Alcoholics Anonymous has just been fantastic to me and my family. It's the gifts that you get. The unexpected things that you get in Alcoholics Anonymous is the things that I just love. I mean, I've been so fortunate here lately I've got guys that I sponsor all over the country, and it's like, I mean, last week I was in Portland, a couple of weeks ago I was in Alaska. I mean, these are places I'd never go. I mean, I'm here with you guys. You guys bring me and my wife here so I can be here with my daughter and my son-in-law. And it's like, you know, if I sat down and they gave me the deal, you know, sit down and write what you'd like to have, I would have left all that out and more. My brother and I have a business together. Well, my dad, my brother, my mother and my sisters, and it's just a fantastic deal. I mean, I'm doing exactly what I. This is the way my mind works. I was in the farming and ranching business for, I don't know how, you know, all my life. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hated it. I absolutely hated what I was doing. I didn't like it. I didn't like nothing about it, but it's the only thing I knew how to do. And now I've been here for 20 years, and I'm going to tell you something. It is exactly what I've always wanted to do, and I never knew it. That's what happens if you got a secret weapon like I got a secret weapon. It seems like to me the same thing happened in my marriage. It's happened in my business. It's happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. It seems like it depends on how I look at the situation. When I start looking at all the bad things that Cindy does, it's amazing how bad she gets, just like that. But when I start looking at all the good things that Cindy does, it's just amazing how good she gets. And that's kind of the way it is. I don't know if you're like me, but I'm going along and I'm having just a time of my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous has been good to me. And life is good, and I don't have any financial problems, and I don't have this, or I don't. And then all of a sudden, it's like a black cloud just comes over you, and it's like, yeah, but you've been screwed all your life. And then you get to thinking about that, and the next thing you know, it's like, before you know it, you've spent 15 or 20 minutes really reviewing how bad you have been screwed over all your life. And it's like, if you don't watch it, if you have a mind like mine, I'll get depressed. You know? And if I get too depressed, I have to call my sponsor and look bad, and I don't want to do that. But what's been so good to me is that I've had a lot of guys in my life that I get to sponsor, and usually, almost invariably, about the time I start getting to where I'm about ready to tip over, one of them will call with a major crisis. You know, they have a hangnail or something, and I'll have to break my momentary wave of self-pity and come out of it and start saying, well, you know, why don't you start treating her like you love her? That'd be different. You know, it's like all of a sudden it's like, well, why don't you start treating her like you love her? You know, it's, oh, all right. It's amazing what happens whenever you ask somebody else to do the right thing. If I'm lucky, maybe I'll start doing it myself. It's just, isn't that goofy? But that's how it's, that's, That's one of the many blessings that I've received in Alcoholics Anonymous. It says that resentment's the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anything else. My first sponsor developed a resentment, and I believe it killed him. Because of the resentment that he had to go away. And as far as I know, he never made it back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was sober 7 years. I think that what we have here is a deadly disease. And what we have here is a great answer to that disease. I am very grateful to Al-Anon. If it wasn't for Al-Anon in my life, I really don't know if we had made it. Those early years of my sobriety was not easy. And we fought like cats and dogs for a long, long time. It's funny. We just loved each other. We just doted over each other. And then alcoholism got worse and worse, and we just got to where we were trying to kill each other. And it just got worse. And I'm not going to get into her story, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good. And I find myself today, I got to tell you, she is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I am so proud of Becky and Tim. I really am. Now, I got another son, and we don't know what he is. He could be an Al-Anon. He likes them Elkie gals a lot, you know. And they get in there and they mess his life up, and he'll go find another one and try the same thing over again. But and he may be normal. Who knows? I don't know. But I got another one behind him. Look out, John. You better be ready, because we're gonna need the Band-Aid here, because I got a feeling, you know, it's like he walks like a duck, talks like a duck, waddles like a duck, and he's even got feathers, so he'll make it, you know. But you can't rush it. You can't rush it. It's like, how do you get us sober? You can't. The day that I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I've never had another drink since. Never had a drug. Never had anything that affects me from the neck up. And how does that happen? I have no idea in the world how that happens. You know, the next guy, he might try 10, 15 years, and he finally gets in here. I don't believe that this is like lightning. I think that it happens to every one of us if we follow the directions outlined in the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't believe that this is a hit or miss deal. I just don't believe it. I've got too much evidence to the contrary. I believe that if you want this thing and you're willing to take the actions necessary to recover from alcoholism, that this thing works, and it works very, very well. It's the best game in town. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, what I like about us is about every 3 or 4 years they come out with a new cure. CNN a couple of years ago, they had a new cure. You know, it's like, well, here goes a couple of, you know, here comes another 50, 60,000 alcoholics that are going to, you know, try it out, and it just doesn't work. It seems like we have to get to a place where we believe in total abstinence. And, God, I thought that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you're just going to show me how to drink like other people. That's what I'd always heard all my life. You know, if you would just calm down, you just have a few. And I didn't realize what I was up against. I didn't realize the disease of alcoholism was a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. That means that the moment that my mind finally tells me that I can't drink no more because I've been thrown in jail, because I ran out of money, or because my body can't stand it anymore, the minute I quit, my mind starts going, there's a little guy in the back of my head, it's like a little time bomb, and it's going, yeah, but this time it's different. This time because of what you know. This time because of how long it's been. This time because Joey said I could. You know, it's like we think it's different, and it's never different. It's always the same, except it's just, for the most part, it's a little worse. I've had many dear friends that have been in this program that are no longer with us because they began to think that they were exempt from the disease of alcoholism, that they had been good long enough. And it's a sad deal. It's a sad deal. I hope that I'm never one of those people. But I know that I have a disease of alcoholism, and I know that if I allow myself to believe the secret weapon, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that left up to my own devices, I will self-destruct. That's the name of my game. And that's why I have a sponsor today. That's why I'm involved in sponsorship. That's why I have a home group. That's why I try to be committed to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's literally saved my life. I want to thank you very much for having me.